I'd like to take a look at Parshas HaShavua, but really in the totality of the time that we find ourselves in. During the three-week period, it is very, very common to read the Parshios of Pinchas, Matos, Maaseh, and Devarim. Those are typically the four Parshios that we read during the 3 weeks. Matos, Maaseh is often a double Parsha. So therefore, it begs the question, is there anything in the Parshios HaShavua, the end of Sefer Bamidbar and the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, that really, really speaks to the nature of the days, the weeks, the time that we find ourselves in? Next week's Parsha, Parshas Dvarim, which is Shabbos Chazon, is almost the most blatant and obvious connection between Parshas HaShavua and Tisha B'Av. The Megillah, Megillas Eicha, which you read on Tisha B'Av, begins Eicha, with that famous word, where are you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And Moshe Rabbeinu, in the beginning of Parshas Dvarim, says, Eicha esel avadi tachachem umasachem urivavchem. So therefore, that word Eicha, which appears in Parshas Dvarim, which we regularly read, Shabbos Chazon, as the Shulchan Aruch points out, it should be read prior to Tisha B'Av. Those two words, Eicha, seemingly speak to the nature of the day, the time, the period that we find ourselves in. That word Eicha is a powerful word, and it's for that reason the next Shabbos, Parshas Dvarim, we will read that pasuk in the tune of Eicha. It's an uncommon thing to read a trup without the standard trup that we read, Kriyas HaTorah and Chamisha Chumshei Torah, but this is one of only a few places where a pasuk is read not in the standardized trup, but rather in the trup of another Megillah, and this context, Megillah, Megillas Eicha. So that's really Sefer Dvarim, Parshas Chazon. What about the end of Sefer Bamidbar? What do we know about the end of Sefer Bamidbar? What does it speak to in terms of the 9 days, the 3 weeks? Here we are. Rosh Chodesh Av is just passed, and we approach Tisha B'Av, Mirza Shemit should be a Yontif. And I'd like to look at the Parshas of Pinchas, Matos, and Maaseh in light of that question. If you take a look in the Sefer Oiv Yisrael, the Apter Rav was Avraham Yoshua Heschel, an outstanding Hasidic Rebbe, whose parish and commentary in the Torah Oiv Yisrael is really awesome. He raises this question, and he notes that Parshas Pinchas, the parsha we read last week, is really always the first parsha that's read in the 3 weeks. And Parshas Pinchas typically is the first Shabbos of the 3 weeks. And he questions even further. If you take a look in Parshas Pinchas, one of the most prominent aspects of the parsha is the fact that it's called the parsha of the Moadim. We read all about the Yom Tov and the holidays and which karbonos are supposed to be brought on which particular Yontif. And the Oiv Yisrael, the Apter Rav says, Lo Dover Reku, it can't be for naught. It can't be that it's just Stam that we read Parshas Pinchas, the parsha of all of the Moad and the holidays in the beginning of the 3 weeks. And he says something which is quite startling. He notes that there are actually 21 days between Shavasa, B'Tamuz, and Tisha B'Av. 3 weeks, 7 times 3 is 21. There are 21 days between Shavasa, B'Tamuz, and Tisha B'Av. And then says the Oiv Yisrael that there are exactly 21 Yamim Tovim in the Torah. If you take the 8 days of Sukkot plus the 7 days of Pesach and 1 day of Shavuos, so the 3 Yamim Tovim have 16 days. 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is 18, 1 day of Yom Kippur is 19, 1 day of Rosh Chodesh is 20, and 1 day of Shabbos is 21. Thus, the Oiv Yisrael explains that the time period of the 3 weeks, the 21 days between Shavuos and B'Tamuz and Tisha B'Av correspond to the 21 biblical Yomim Tovim, the holidays that we have, and explains the Oiv Yisrael that it must be that during these 3 weeks, during these 21 days, that we are supposed to recreate and refabricate and reestablish these 3 painful, difficult weeks really into Yamim Tovim. Indeed, that's what Chazal say. That's what the Pasuk says in the Navi, that ultimately each of the fast days, Tzom HaRevi, Tzom HaChamishi, Tzom HaTshi, Tzom HaAsiri, will yell l'sason and l'simcha. Ultimately, these terrible, painful days, these days and these weeks, which are full of such trials and tribulations, so painful in the history of the Jewish people, ultimately they will turn to positive days. They will be unlike the days that we are familiar with now. We won't focus on the Churban. the destruction of the first and second Beis HaMikdash, but they will change. There'll be a Nahafochu. There'll be an absolute about face, and these 3 weeks will turn into Biyamim Tovim. And therefore, it's our responsibility not just to look at the sorrow, the pain, the challenges of the 3 weeks, the history, and all that has happened, but the fact that we begin the 3 weeks with Parshas Pinchas speaks to the fact that we have to have an outlook. We have to have open eyes, and we have to appreciate the larger picture of Jewish history and understand that we're able to recreate and to change these days and these weeks, that these 21 days shouldn't be days of sorrow, of pain and suffering, but ultimately they should be turned into days of Yamim Tovim, of Pesach, Shavuos and Sukkot. That, says the Oyv Yisrael, is why we begin the 3 weeks with Parshas Pinchas. However, what is it about Parshas Matos and Maaseh? We see the bookends. The first Shabbos of the 3 weeks is the Parsha of the Moadim, as the Oyv Yisrael explains. Parshas Dvarim, the Parsha that we read Shabbos Chazon, is Parshas Eicha, Eicha Esa Levadi. But what about Parshas Matos and Maaseh? What's there? What's in the Parshas that we read just yesterday on Shabbos that speaks to the nature of the 9 days of Av and the end of Tammuz, the fast of Shavuos B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av? If you take a look in Parshas Maaseh, Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasukim Lamed Vav, Lamed Zayin, Lamed Ches, page 920, in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash, you'll see something that seems to be different and an anomaly that we don't find in all of the Chumash. We all know that the siblings, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, die toward the end of Sefer Bamidbar, at the end of, before Klal Yisrael enter Eretz Yisrael. Each of them die in the desert. Moshe dies last. The final 8 psukim is when we know Vayamas Moshe. But all 3 siblings pass away at the end of the 40th year prior to Bnei Yisrael entering Eretz Yisrael. And if you take a look in the Torah, we don't know anything about the dates of the deaths of Miriam and Moshe. We don't know what day they died. We know al pi chazal what they died, but the Torah never explicitly tells us the date of their death. We don't know the yortzeit, not of Moshe Rabbeinu from Psukim the Torah, and we don't know the yortzeit of Miriam, albeit that the Torah explicitly tells us about their death in the final year in the Midbar. However, if you take a look in Perek Lamed Gimel, chapter 33, Psukim Lamed Zayin, Lamed Ches and Lamed Tes, you will see here on page 920 that Aaron's death is recorded. And not only is it recorded, but its date is quite significant. Take a look, Pasuk Lamed Ches, Vayal Aaron HaKoin El Hor HaHor. Aaron climbs up the mountain, the famous mountain of Hor HaHor, Al Pi Hashem Vayom HaSham. Aaron dies. Aaron passes away atop the mountain Hor HaHor. Bishnas ha'arboim litzeis b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. In the 40th year of the Jewish people's exodus from Egypt. So at the cusp of entering the land of Israel, Aaron HaKohen dies. When does he die? B'chodesh ha'chamishi b'echad l'chodesh. On the first day of the 5th month. V'Aaron ben Shalosh v'Esrim u'me'a shana b'moso b'har'ar. Aaron dies at the ripe old age of 123 atop Hor HaHor. But it's the date of Aaron's demise that should raise our minds to ask a very fascinating thing. What date is it that Aaron dies? What is his yortzeit? Chodesh HaChamishi, the 5th month, Be'echad l'chodesh, on the first day of the 5th month. What's the 5th month? Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av. The 5th month is Chodesh Av. The first day of Chodesh Av is Rosh Chodesh. Aaron HaKohen dies on Rosh Chodesh Av. The yortzeit of Aaron HaKohen is Rosh Chodesh Av, and it begs the question. Here we are just after Rosh Chodesh Av. Rosh Chodesh Av is the month that we all know that Chazal tell us, Mishnichnas Av, Mimatin Besimcha. When the month of Av enters, we decrease our level of joy. But what is it about the significance of Aaron HaKohen's demise on that day, Rosh Chodesh Av? And if you take a look in his commentary, Hamek Dover, the Netziv Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin notes that it's not coincidental that Aaron dies on Rosh Chodesh Av. Because we all know that every date in Jewish history is significant. And the fact that Klal Yisrael mourn on Rosh Chodesh Av, beginning with the month of Av, which leads to Tisha B'Av, the most painful, saddest day on the Jewish calendar, speaks to the fact that it didn't come out of thin air. The reason that Rosh Chodesh Av is such a painful and difficult month is because of the fact that you go back in Jewish history and it's the day of Aaron's death. And thus the Nitziv says that the end of Aaron's life comes to a conclusion in the month of Av. Aaron is the Kohen Gadol. He's the Kohen HaGadol Me'echav. He's the one who served in the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan. He is the one that began all of the Avoda of the Kohanim. And therefore, the fact that Aaron's demise takes place in Rosh Chodesh speaks to the fact that it's foreshadowing that the future of the Jewish people also, there'll be an end to their service in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, and the Chodesh Av, in the month of Av. And therefore, Aaron's death, says the Nitziv, speaks to the fact that we could look forward to also an end of Avoda in the Mishkan and the Mikdash. Just like Aaron passes away in Rosh Chodesh Av and his Avoda comes to an end, this too will speak to the fact that nationally, Klal Yisrael in the future will also struggle in the month of Av, the Beis HaMikdash will come to its conclusion. And of course, we all know about Aaron HaKohen. He's the Ohev Shalom and the Rodev Shalom. Aaron is the peace lover. He's the negotiator. He's the one who's able to mediate between people. He's able to bring peace amongst the Jewish people. That's what Yerushalayim is, Shleimus, Shalom, Shalem. And Churban Beis HaMikdash, at least Churban Beis HaMikdash Hasheni, takes place as a result of Sinas Chinam, destruction, baseless hatred, poisonous relationships, inappropriate speech, Al Kamtza Ubar Kamtza Nechrav Yerushalayim. As a result of Kamtza throwing out Bar Kamtza without any good reason, baseless hatred, Sinas Chinam, is the reason and is the basis for the why Klal Yisrael were unable to continue to serve God in the Beis HaMikdash Hasheni. And therefore, Aaron's death on Rosh Chodesh Av, B'Chodesh HaChamishi, B'Echa L'Chodesh, the first day of the fifth month, Rosh Chodesh Av, is the beginning of the month and the beginning of the day and the beginning of this time period becoming a very difficult, painful, ominous time in the calendar. And it's not out of thin air that the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, both the first and the second, take place on the very same day, Tisha B'Av, as the Gemara tells us at the end of Maseches Tainis, Megalgalin Chov Alidei Chayav. When a day on the calendar is a happy day, it remains forever. It's in the almost the DNA of the day. And therefore, Yamim Tovim all take place in the middle of the month, Tesvav Tishrei, Tesvav Nisan, when the moon is full, when the moon is complete, when there's a sense of wholeness and completion, that's when there's a holiday, that's when there's a Yom Tov. But Rosh Chodesh Av, when Aaron's death takes place, and when there no longer is a Kohen Gadol, and that foreshadows that ultimately this month will be a difficult, painful, sad, challenging month. It will be a month of discord. Aaron brought peace, Aaron brought shalom, Aaron brought togetherness, Aaron brought wholeness. And when that leaves the world, again, there could be destruction and division and divisiveness. And that's what the Chodesh is all about. And therefore, it's not for naught and it's not coincidental that Aaron's death takes place on that day. And of course, that's the basis and the reason for foreshadowing the ultimate tragedies and tribulations and trials that take place in this month. And for that reason, on an annual basis, Parshas Maaseh is always read either right before Rosh Chodesh Av or the Shabbos after Rosh Chodesh Av to remind us that without Aaron, without Shalom, without a Kohen, Klal Yisrael have problems, Klal Yisrael have suffering, and therefore that's the beginning of Parshas Maaseh, and that speaks to the challenges that are upon us. But it's not just Parshas Maaseh. It's in the beginning of Parshas Matos where we see something quite similar. One of the most paramount and important stories that takes place in the end of Parshas Bamidbar is the events which take place with Shevet Reuven and Shevet Gad. Their disinterest in entering Eretz Yisrael, and they approach Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, we have a lot of cattle, we have a lot of flock, we have a lot, we own a lot, we're wealthy, we have large families, we have a lot of cattle. We are unable to carry ourselves over the east bank of the Jordan River to enter Eretz Yisrael. Allow us to stay on the other side. That's our interest. That's our desire. That's our request. Mikne Rav Hayel Levnei Reuven Levnei Gad. Page 910, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Aleph, chapter 32, verse 1. Reuven and Gad were very wealthy and they had a lot. And then because of their abundance and their wealth and their large families, that was their request to stay on the east bank of the Jordan River. That's their question and that's their request. And Moshe responds with a very powerful response. And in Pasuk Vav, Pasuk 6, Moshe says, Levnei Gad v'levnei Reuven, four words. Ha'acheichem yavau l'milchama. Your brothers are going to go to war and you're just going to remain behind? Can't be. It's an impossibility. What's Moshe Rabbeinu saying? Moshe Rabbeinu is saying that you are dividing yourself. You're separating yourselves from your brothers. Klal Yisrael, in order to succeed, to conquer the land of Israel, and to properly settle the land of Israel, need to be be'achdus, need to be together. And not only do you need to be together, but if they're going to fight, and you're going to stay behind enjoying the land, and just settling your family and your flock, you're leaving behind half of the nation. You'll be leaving behind the majority of the people. You don't care? Ha'acheichem yavol l'milchama v'atem teishnupo. Your brothers are going to war, and you're just going to worry about your cattle, your flock, and your children? Very, very harsh, strong, and powerful words that Moshe lobbies at Gad and Reuven. How could you be so ununderstanding? How could you be so baseless in unappreciating what your brothers and sisters are going to have to go through? This is on some level a form of just disinterest and not caring about your own people. Moshe Rabbeinu continues and says to them, you're weakening the heart of your people. Your nation is going to become very, very depressed. They're going to become uninterested. They're going to become weakened. If you're just going to stay on the east bank of the Jordan River and everybody else is going to go to fight, what do you think that's going to do to the morale of the people? And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu says that can't happen. It's an impossibility. And Moshe continues and says something even stronger to them, that the behavior that they have and their attitude of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven is very reminiscent of a similar behavior which took place in the beginning of the Midbar, in year one, not in year 40. But what is it reminiscent of, says Moshe Rabbeinu? The Miraglim. The Miraglim did something very, very similar. They also separated and weakened the morale of the people. They came back and responded and told, we can't conquer the land. We can't enter Eretz Yisrael. And how did the people respond? They became very saddened. And they said, we can't do it, then we won't do it. And Moshe exclaims and tells them that the attitude that they have is very, very similar to something which took place 40 years ago, the Meraglim. Thus, the behavior of the tribes of Reuven and Gad, says Moshe, is similar to that which the Meraglim did. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Vayicharaf Hashem b'Yisrael. Moshe told the Reuven and Gad that God got very angry at the Jewish people. Vayaneim b'midbar arba'im shana tom kol ador oseh hara b'nei Hashem. For 40 years, we were forced to sojourn in the desert as a result of the sin of the Meraglim. When did the sin of the Meraglim take place? The Gemara says at the end of Maseches Tainis, based upon the Pasuk, that tells us in Parsha Shlach that they returned, Vayivchu kol ha'eda balayla ha'u, that the entire nation cried on that evening. Do you know what evening that was? Tisha B'Av. It was Tisha B'Av. And God responds, and Chazal tell us, Atem b'chisem b'chia shel chinam, ane'item lecha b'chia shel doros. You're crying for naught. There's no reason to cry as a result of the report that the Meraglim responded with. You could do it. You could conquer. Why are you weakened as a result of the report? Kaleb ben Yefun and Yoshua ben Nun had the proper attitude. And again, we see Parshas Matos speaks to the time period that we find ourselves in. because Reuven and Gad were separating themselves from the people. The goal of Klal Yisrael and their entry to Eretz Yisrael has to be be'achdos, like Aaron HaKohen, the Oyev Shalom and Rodev Shalom. There needs to be camaraderie and brotherhood. There needs to be that ability for us to be able to work together. But when Klal Yisrael are divided, there's not a possibility for us to succeed. And therefore, that's the reason that Klal Yisrael were unable to enter into the land of Eretz Yisrael as a result of the Meraglim, because what did the Meraglim do? They divided us. They challenged us. They separated us. And again, that's what Reuven and Gad do. They separate the Jewish people. They separate themselves from Klal Yisrael. And that's the reason that Moshe's rejoinder to Reuven and Gad, when they suggest and request to stay on the east bank of the Jordan River, Moshe says, then that's not the approach. Klal Yisrael will only settle Eretz Yisrael if it's able to be done be'achdos. And if there's going to be separation and division, the likes of the Meraglim, you won't enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. And if you, Reuven and Gad, 40 years later, are going to follow the path of the Meraglim, and you too want to separate yourselves, we are unable to enter the land of Eretz Yisrael because it's not going to be successful. And therefore, that's the basis of Moshe's response, comparing Reuven and Gad to the Meraglim. When Reuven and Gad hear this, and they understand Moshe's very, very sharp response to them, they respond to Moshe and say, we're willing to work. We're willing to enter. We will first go and settle the land of Eretz Yisrael. We will fight. We will go with our brothers. We will enter Eretz Yisrael. And then only once there's Yerusha v'Yeshiva after 14 years, once the land is settled and conquered, then our request will be to return to the east bank of the Jordan River. So they understand and appreciate what it is that Moshe tells them. And ultimately, Klal Yisrael are able to work together and they're able to understand each other and to hear what Moshe has to say. And that is another reason that we read the Parshios of Matos and Maaseh during this time period, to speak to the fact that we need to be Bitzavsa, we need to be together, we need to be Ba'achtos in order to enter Eretz Yisrael. And that doesn't happen. That's the story of the Meraglim, that's the story of Reuven and Gad, that inability to work together, that friction and that separation and that division does not allow us to enter the Yerushalayim, the world, the land, the city of Shalom, of Shlemos, of Shalom. And that's what we need. And that's another reminder as we enter Rosh Chodesh Av, as we enter the 9 days, as we prepare for Tisha B'Av. But at the end of Parshas Maaseh, prior to finishing and concluding Sefer Bamidbar, there's yet another hint to the Parsha of the days that we find ourselves in. And Parshas Maaseh speaks about the Arei Miklat, the 6 cities of refuge. And we all know the halacha, the rule based upon the Mishnayos, the Gemara, the end of the Maseches Makos. The Psukim tell us here in Parshas Maaseh that any Jew who murders another Jew accidentally b'shogeg, the halacha is that you're forced to run to the city of refuge. And if you enter the city of refuge, you're protected and you will be safe. And this is what the Torah reports on page 930. And the halacha and the rule is that that's where you belong. And you will stay there and you will remain there, says the Torah in Pasuk Chafhei, Anmos HaKohen HaGadol Asher Mashach Oso B'Shemer HaKodesh. You remain in the Ir Miklat until the death of the Kohen Gadol. Once the Kohen Gadol dies, there's a respite. You're permitted to leave, and at that point, there's no longer a Gadol. Hadam is no longer able to murder and to kill you, and there's freedom. That's the halacha, that's the rule. These Arei Miklat were set up in Eretz Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael had the Arei Miklat, and Chalila, if any Jew murdered another Jew b'shogeg, you would run and you would spend time in the Arei Miklat. But the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Makos something amazing, that we know that the Kohen Gadol's death would be that which was the license for everybody to leave the city of refuge. The mother of the Kohen Gadol was so concerned about her son that everybody would be davening for his death. Because once the Kohen dies, everybody's free from the Ir Miklat. So the mommy of the Kohen Gadol would daven, and she would do more than that. She would send food and treats and clothing to all the inmates in the Ir Miklat that they shouldn't daven for the death of her son, the Kohen. And there would be care packages sent to all those in the Ir Miklat. The mommy of the Kohen Gadol cared so much about her son, the Kohen Gadol, she didn't have anybody davening for him to die. So care packages and treats and food and clothing and all types of goodies were sent so that all the tens and hundreds that were in the Ir Miklat wouldn't daven for the death of the Kohen Gadol. The Mefarshim ask a very simple question. Was that really going to work? Was that really a good trick? Do you think that they wanted to be in the Ir Miklat and because they were receiving care packages, they would no longer daven for the death of the Kohen? You know, imagine for a minute, you know, you have an Israeli soldier's kids on the front lines, you know, in Lebanon, in Egypt, wherever they are. And they're receiving care packages. You know, we raise money to get them warm coats and warm clothing and food that they're taken care of. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing. But is there any thought that any of these soldiers have that, yeah, you know, it's not so bad. We're getting these care packages. We'll stay. We keep on getting warm winter clothing. They're sending us candy. They're sending us nice letters. You know, man, maybe it's not so bad here. We'll stay. Of course not. They want to go home. They want to go back to their jobs, to their families, to their lives, to everything that they have. So what's the mother of the Kohen Gadol doing here? What's the Havamina? Does she really think that they're going to be happy and satisfied with these care packages coming, that they're going to be satisfied to stay behind in the Ir Miklat? That's not their interest. Rav Meir Tzvi Bergman in his Sefer Shari Ora, Rav Meir Tzvi Bergman is the son of Rav Shach, an elder Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshiva's Rashbi in Bnei Brak today, says the following. Says the mother of the Kohen Gadol understood something that we don't understand. She understood the power of tefillah. She understood that if a Jew davens for something seriously, without any other thoughts, unadulterated, right, with a complete, absolute, pure heart and a mind and a soul, the power of tefillah is so effective that it can indeed do damage to her son. But the moment she would send them a care package, their tefillah wouldn't be with the same reinkite. Their tefillah wouldn't be with the same power and potency and pureness because they got something. They received something. They got a care package. They got the food. They got the clothing. And there was some level of, that was really nice. That was really thoughtful. Maybe we shouldn't daven for the death of the Kohen. And the moment the tefillah is not pure and pristine, crisp and clear, that it has any negiyah, any iota, any level of absoluteness, the tefillah is not as powerful. And therefore, that's what the mother of the Kohen Gadol understood. That if I'm able to turn their hearts a minute, if I'm able to turn their hearts an inch, a millimeter, a second, their tefillah is not going to be as powerful. And therefore, as a result, that was the insight of the mother of the Kohen Gadol. She didn't need to convince them to return home. She knew that they wanted to come home. She understood that the care packages weren't going to be that which was going to leave them in the Ir Miklat. But she knew very fine and very well that if their hearts and their minds could be turned just a bit and their tefillos wouldn't be with the same passion and the same power, maybe that's all that was necessary, that their tefillos wouldn't be as intense and therefore they would be unable to cause the demise and the downfall of her son, the Kohen Gadol. This power of tefillah is something very, very unique to the 9 days and the time that we find ourselves in. The Mesilas Yisshar Moshe Chaim Lutzat in the end of Perek Yutes, chapter 19, says that many people during the 9 days and during the 3 weeks and really throughout the year don't think that they have any ability to allow the Beis Hamikdash HaShlishi to return. And people say, and he writes, Misafun Ma'ani L'spalala Beis Hamikdash V'churbanu. Who am I to daven for the return of the Beis Hamikdash? For so many hundreds and thousands of years, Jews, greater, more pious than me, have been praying and davening for the return of the Beis Hamikdash. What is my Yerushalayim Yircha Barachim Im Toshim going to do? What is my Ritzei Hashem Elokeinu B'amcha Yisrael B'Sevilasim going to do? What's my V'sechazen Einein B'shulcha L'tzion Barachim Im going to do? Hashiva Shofteinu Kevarishona. Really me? Tafshin Pei Beis 2022, my tefillos, what can they do? How will they reproduce? How will they replicate the Beis Hamikdash HaShlishi? I can't do it. Earlier Doros, earlier generations were not successful. Me, ma'ani, ma'safan, ani, l'spalel, says the Ramchal. And the Ramchal answers the end of Perek Yotes, Mesil Seshem says, no, you got it all wrong. Chuvaso Bitzido, the answer is written, it's a Mishnah Meseches Sanhedrin. Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, the world was created for me. And through my tefillos, indeed, I can change the world. And through my tefillos, indeed, I can allow the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. My tefillos are so critical and so important. Just like the mother of the Kohen Gadol understood the koach, the power of tefillah, we need to understand and appreciate that as well. And if we believe in tefillah, our tefillah will be successful. Maybe we just don't believe in tefillah. Maybe we don't recognize that our tefillos are so powerful and so important and have such import. But if we understand and we recognize that three times a day in Shemona Esrei, when we say the words with Yerushalayim Yircha Barachem Imtashuv, if we really mean it in earnest, if we're really serious, if that's what we really want, we no longer just want to visit the Kosel and see a replica of a wall, but we want to see the real deal. We want to see the Beis HaMikdash, Bibinyana, the beauty, Kohanim B'Avodasam, Levin B'Shiram B'Zimram, Yisrael B'Duchanim. If we want to see that, we'll be successful. And if we believe it, then we know what was, and we appreciate what was. Then we will be successful, we will be able to understand. And thus, tefillah has a very, very important and powerful place during the week ahead, between this Sunday and next Sunday, between the week of Tisha B'Av, the 9 days, Shavua Shechal Bo. It's a time to increase our tefillah, as the Ramchal says. But I'd like to conclude Parshas Maaseh and Sefer B'Midbar with something that this year dawned on me, which never did. Perek Lamed Vav, chapter 36, the last chapter, the last perek, and all of Sefer B'Midbar, Parshas Maaseh, is a total of 13 psukim, Yud Gimel psukim. And do you know what Parshas Maaseh concludes with? And do you know what all of Sefer B'Midbar finishes with? It finishes with the Bnos Tzlavcha. You remember them from Parshas Pinchas, the five daughters of Tzlavcha, who died, and they didn't have a father. And the question was brought to Moshe Rabbeinu, who will inherit? Because biblically speaking, in Torah, the daughters don't inherit. And they came in front of Moshe, and they asked Moshe, we also want a chelek in Eretz Yisrael. We also want a part in the land. What's going to be? Who will be the proper heir who will inherit our father? And Moshe Rabbeinu responded and turned to them and said, you're asking a good question. I don't know your response. I need to speak to God. And Moshe turns to God, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe to tell them that the request is a valid one. And indeed, they should be the rightful heirs of their father, Tzlavchad. And from here on in, the halacha was that any man who passes away without any sons, his daughters become her heirs. And therefore, they are the ones who inherit. That's the parsha that we're familiar with from Parshas Pinchas. However, if you skip forward two parshios, Matos and Mas, and the end of all of Sefer Bamidbar, we return to these wonderful daughters. The Bnos Tzlavchad appear again. And who comes in front of Moshe? It's the tribe of Menashe, the son of Yosef, who say, we have a problem. You, Moshe, paskind that these daughters are permitted to inherit. They're going to marry into other tribes. And then the other tribes now have received their chelek, have received a larger portion in Eretz Yisrael. The daughters of Tzlavcha, if they marry into another tribe, so the other tribe and the men who marry them will inherit their property, and we, B'nai Menashe, B'nai Yosef, won't have as large of a property in Eretz Yisrael. And this was a question, this was a bothersome to the tribe of Menashe. And you take a look on page 932, Perek Lamed Vav, chapter 36, they turn to Moshe Rabbeinu and they ask this question. V'haya le'echem im ne'shifte b'nei Yisrael l'noshim, pasuk gimel, v'nigra nachlasa minachlas avoseinu. Our inheritance will be shortchanged because the men that they marry will become the inheritors of Tzlavchad, and the chelek that Menashe b'nei Yosef have in Eretz Yisrael will be much less. Our inheritance, our place, our land in Eretz Yisrael will be lessened. And then Moshe says, you're right. Again, you make a good claim. And similar to we're reading in Parshas Pinchas, Cain, Bnos, Tzlavcha, Dobros, Moshe says, yes, you daughters of Tzlavcha have spoken it properly. Moshe says the same thing here. Vayetzav Moshe and Pasuk Hey, as B'nai Yisrael al-Pi Hashem Lemor, Kein Mata B'nai Yosef Dovrim. The sons of Yosef, the tribe of Manasseh, speaks correctly. It's inappropriate for them to have a lesser land. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says in Pasuk Vav, Zehadavar Shatziv Hashem Labnos Tzlavcha. This is what I'm teaching and telling the daughters of Tzlavchad. Latov Beinayim Tiel Anashim. Really, you can marry anybody. Any daughter whose father passes away and leaves property to them really can marry into any tribe. The other tribes are going to inherit the property and it's going to decrease the property of that Shevet. Really, ideally, says Moshe, the best thing for them to do is only to marry within their tribe. Only to marry within the tribe of Manasseh so that their property will stay within the tribe of Manasseh. And indeed, that's what happens. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Pasuk 11, page 934. Three psukim before the end of all of Sefer Bamidbar tells us that who did the daughters of Tzlavka marry? Vatiana machla sirtza v'chagla u'milka v'noa b'nos Tzlavka livnei dodeim l'nashim. They marry their cousins. They marry their first cousins. And the property stays in the tribe of Manasseh. And the property belongs to Shevet Yosef. And I ask you, all of Sefer Bamidbar ends with this? After such a tumultuous Sefer, the Miraglim and Korach, and Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Manasseh, and all of the ups and downs, the highs and lows, the fighting and the bickering, Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron and Miriam's death, the Anane HaKavod, and the Be'er Shel Miriam, and all of the miracles of the Mon and the Slav. Sefer Bamidbar is such a powerful, unbelievable, incredible Sefer. Klal Yisrael about to enter Eretz Yisrael, and they're forced to stay for 40 years, and everything that takes place throughout those 40 years. And it ends with this story of the Bnos Tzlavchad, the daughters of Tzlavchad, being forced to marry men within their tribe so that the inheritance doesn't belong in another Shevet? How do we understand that? Why does Sefer Maaseh and Parshas Maaseh and Sefer Bamidbar conclude with this? And it would seem that what we see from these daughters and what we see from this tribe is something that we haven't seen yet in all of Sefer Bamidbar. And what is it that we see? They loved Eretz Yisrael. They didn't want to give up any portion of their land. Of all of the generations that were supposed to enter Eretz Yisrael, the Meraglim and Reuven and Gad, they didn't want to enter Eretz Yisrael. They said, no, we'll stay on the other side. And the Meraglim said, we can't enter. Enter these daughters of Tzlavchad and enter the tribe of Manasseh and say, how could it be that we're not going to have a chelek in Eretz Yisrael? And Rashi tells us in Parshas Pinchas that Bnos Tzlavchad mechavavos es haaretz, they loved Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, Parshas Maaseh Sefer Bamidbar concludes with the way that it should have began, with the Jewish people loving the land of Israel, passionate about it, unable to see any portion of Eretz Yisrael go to another tribe. And thus the tribe of Manasseh, the son of Yosef, said it can't be that if they daughter men from outside of their tribe, that we are going to have a decreased amount of property of inheritance in Eretz Yisrael. And thus Moshe Rabbeinu says, you're right. But what we see is their love, is their passion, is their interest, their desire to have a chelek and to have property in Eretz Yisrael. But the story doesn't end here. It has an even more beautiful ending. Because the Gemara tells us in the end of Maseches Tainis, Daf Lamed Amud Beis, the date Tu Be'av, the 15th of Av, is the happiest day on the Jewish calendar, similar to Yom Kippur. L'hoyu yomim tovim l'Yisrael ki yom ha-kippurim v'tes vav be'av. Yom Kippur, we know why it's such a happy day. Yom Slicha Mechil, it's a day of atonement. It's a day of complete cleanliness, tahara. But what's so special about Tu Be'av, 1 week after Tisha B'Av, the 15th of Av is such a happy day, what's so happy? And the Gemara gives several reasons why it's such a happy day. But one of the reasons for the joy of the day, says the Gemara, Yom Shehutru Shvatim Zebazet. It's a day where all of the tribes were now able to intermarry. Because it was on this day, in this end of Sefer Bamidbar, we just read the Psukim, the daughters of Tzlavchad were told that you can't intermarry into another tribe because we want the land to belong specifically to your Shevet. But later on in Jewish history, that changed. And Klal Yisrael were told that that's no longer the case. Reuven can marry into Shimon and Shimon into Levi, Yisachar, into Zvulun, Menashe, and the rest. In any situation where there was a daughter who no longer had a father and she received the property, she was forced to marry a man from her Shevet. But beginning on Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av, that was no longer the case. Klal Yisrael, the Shvatim, were able to intermarry. And therefore, we conclude Parshas Maaseh, Sefer Bamidbar, the Parshios of Pinchas, Matos and Maaseh, the 3 weeks. It concludes on such a happy note and such a joyous day, Tu B'Av. It begins with the saddest day of Rosh Chodesh Av and Aaron's death, and the divisiveness of the people, which is foreshadowed, as explained by the Netziv, in the destruction that's going to be caused in this month. But it ends in all of Parshas Maaseh by telling us, don't be forlorn, don't be saddened. A sad day can become a happy day, as the Ohev Yisrael tells us that the 21 days between Shivasar B'Tamuz to Tisha B'Av can turn to the most joyous, happiest days in the Jewish calendar. They can turn into Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. The 3 weeks can turn to the 3 Yamim Tovim. Shimu, Divrei, Chazon, those weeks can turn into the happiest, most joyous Yamim Tovim. And therefore, the Yom Tov of Tisha B'Av will become a joyous day. And Tu B'Av is a happy day. And it's a day that Utru Shvatim Zeh Bazeh, it's a day of completion and wholeness. When Klal Yisrael were disparate and separated, when they were unable to work together, when Reuven and Gad said, we don't want to enter with everybody else. We saw a sense of disparity and separateness and division. And that comes to a full close. And the picture is complete at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, when Klal Yisrael come together, they join together. The Hutru Shvatim Zeh Bezeh, the Klal Yisrael love Eretz Yisrael, they enter Eretz Yisrael, and that's what the Bnos Slavcha teach us, that's what Menashe and Yosef teach us, to love Eretz Yisrael, to appreciate Eretz Yisrael, and if we have that attitude of working together to be Ohavei Shalom, Rotzvei Shalom, like Aaron HaKohen, that's what we need to enter Eretz Yisrael, that's what will bring the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi, and that's what ultimately will cause the end of the Golas and the bringing of the Gula. Bimher v'yameinu, wishing everybody a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful week.